Peter, we're not speaking. Is that correct? Are you speaking? Okay. Oh, sorry then. Then Heather Spalding, and Peter Welty, and then Tom Buscelli. Thank you. They'll be followed by Tony Jones, I believe is the last name, Jamie Faison, and Sharon Nassett.
Please go ahead and begin, folks. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Heather Spalding. I am the Vice President of the Student Senate at Portland State University, and I am also the Assistant to our Campus Sustainability Coordinator. And I also have a copy of the resolution that we passed last night by a vote of 13 opposed and 1 for.
13 against 1.
13 against, but we support the declaration of support for an independent analysis of the I-5 extension. So we do represent 25,000 students, and we are also the number one visited destination by TriMet. So we are very involved in this debate. And we think that this is a temporary solution to a problem that we will have to deal with later. And personally, I'm from Southern Oregon, and that's the timber capital of the world. So I have my own issues in that area, which include the health department being closed and also having police who will not go outside of the city limits because of cutbacks. So in proposing a solution for this, I would hope that you would consider methods that would also benefit other parts of our state, because if you're just thinking about a solution for economic reasons, we also have our own problems in this state that need to be addressed. So I learned a lot from what the Robert Liberty proposal was, and I definitely agree with that. I think it would be good to toll first before thinking about other options, and then also using the trains, because trains also benefit more for our community. So I have a quote, and it's that you can't attempt to solve a problem with the same mindset that brought you into it, and that's Albert Einstein. So I think that the congestion problem is a result of our dependence on cars, and so to continue doing that is not going to benefit us in the long run. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, commissioners, thanks for having us here. My name is Peter Welty, and I'm another of the student senators from PSU. And also, I live downtown during the school year, and currently I'm living in Beaverton, so that might be interesting. The problems I have with this are that it's based on a number of preposterous assumptions. One is that people driving from Vancouver to Washington County for a soccer practice or whatever they're shopping, I don't know, Walmart, is acceptable. And the way I see it, Portland's this pinnacle of sustainability, and you guys promote yourself on that, but it's surrounded by kind of sprawl. And to just accept the new 12-lane highway connecting, essentially allowing more commuters from Clark County to Washington County, is just asking for, you know, what you've worked so hard to achieve to be bulldozed over. And it's also a crazy assumption that gasoline is going to cost $1.25 a gallon in 2030. Any traffic model that's based on that is definitely flawed. And it's preposterous that doubling the width of the bridge will have absolutely no impact on development in Clark County. They doubled the bridge before in 1958, the width of it, and obviously that didn't work. Spending $4.2 billion on this bridge, it's crazy to assume that will not reduce the amount of money available for other needs, such as safe, maintained streets, schools, and affordable housing. And ODOT apparently thinks that transponders are a viable idea, but in an age when mileage traveled is decreasing is kind of preposterous. So a yes vote on this is affirming that these faulty assumptions are acceptable, and it is a vote to throw away any legal power you have. So please vote no.
Good evening. My name is Tom Buschel. I'm the managing attorney at the Pacific Environmental Advocacy Center at the Lewis and Clark School of Law. PEAC is representing a diverse group of organizations regarding this bridge proposal, including Northwest Environmental Defense Center, Coalition for a Livable Future and the Portland Audubon Society. Why are we rushing to approve something that none of us really like? That's really my first question. There are right now four, I keep hearing the bridge project being referred to. There are four very specific alternatives on the table right now. They're in the draft environmental impact statement. But no one I know, except maybe Rex Burkholder and the Oregonian editorial board, seem to think that these alternatives are green or are compatible with Portland's values. Then I read today in the newspaper that Portland, in fact, needs the right kind of bridge, and that approval here only moves the bridge proposal from one phase of evaluation to the next one. Well, my next question is, when exactly are we going to see a specific analysis regarding this right kind of bridge? The next phase is, in fact, the final environmental impact statement. What if we don't like the bridge in the final environmental impact statement? That's a final document. The Federal Highway Administration's record of decision usually follows within a matter of weeks after the final environmental impact statement is issued. The draft environmental impact statement, which is the stage we're at right now, is in fact when we're supposed to see all of the reasonable alternatives. We still haven't seen a reasonable green alternatives. This is when the city has leverage. What I would like to know is, does the city in fact have a legal opinion that it can enforce any conditions that it puts on this bridge, or will have significant legal tools to fight if they don't get those conditions? I don't think it does. And if it does have that legal opinion, I'd like to see it, and I think the public should see it. Thank you.
It doesn't.
I didn't think so.
It's political leverage. I don't know if you were here at the beginning, but it's
I wasn't.
Political leverage.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
The next three are Tony Jones from the Metropolitan Contractors Improvement Partnership, Jamie Faison, Sharon Nassett, Matthew Denton, Corky Collier. Okay. They'll be followed by Fred Nussbaum, John Reinhold, and Jim Edelson.
Please go ahead and begin, folks.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just begin. For the record, my name is Sharon Nassett. Hello, gentlemen. You're happy to be inside. I parked six blocks away, and going out to re-feed the meter was a very hot experience. You have a very hard challenge in front of you today, and it can be made a lot easier by thinking about it in a couple of different manners, and that is the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, specifically sets up times where you stop and reflect about what you're considering doing before you go forward. Those people who have been coming forward saying, if we don't do this, you know, it's another, you know, how many years and they won't live through it. Absolutely incorrect. We have started the process. The process right now is in an evaluation step. Sam was Commissioner Adams was very correct in the beginning statement in several of the things he had to say. All of those things still follow when you stop and look at the process and follow the NEPA process. When Matt Garrett was talking about we need to build on the previous studies, we do. I've been involved in three of them. The I-5 task force recommended a replacement or supplemental bridge. It recommended an alignment bridge that was a port-to-port to be studied thoroughly in a future, and the rail. The paperwork I've handed you here, which is B, states what they did not study. The elephant in the room is we are not supposed to be picking one bridge. We are to be having a range of options. Mr. Howe brought in a bridge option. I brought in a bridge option, and so did others. The NEPA process says that they will go through a process, and at the end, you get place, show, or third place. We were removed, and these on B are what they did not study. I know I'm out of time, but I can tell you, If you read the I-5 task force, which did evaluate some of these, land use, the economy, safety, the environment, all of these were rated high and significantly on freight. Thank you. Any questions?
Well, I just want to recognize you, Sharon, for the many, many hours and tireless interest that you've taken in this project. And we might not always agree on every issue, but you've shown up more than any other Portlander, I think.
Thank you.
On this process. So I admire that. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Matthew Denton, Mayor Potter, and members of the commission. If widening freeways made cities greener, Atlanta would be the greenest city in the U.S. But they have 72 air quality action days in 2007. I live in North Portland, and I ride my bike almost everywhere. Bicycles are green. They're good exercise. It costs me very little. I don't know what the price of gas is. I don't care. And 70% of Portlanders would ride a bicycle if they weren't afraid of cars. During morning rush hour, the freeway south of the new bridge will flow at 10 miles an hour. I don't think that very many people will wait for that. Many people will get off the freeway and drive down the local streets. And the DIS agrees. They say that if new bridge is built, there'll be measurable increases on local traffic as far south as Broadway. They didn't study south of Broadway, so we don't know how far south it goes. Let's look at what history has shown us about the Broadway Bridge. In 1991, 30,000 cars traveled across the Broadway Bridge. In 2007, only 27,000 cars traveled across the Broadway Bridge, and the economy did not collapse. Why? Because 3,000 bicyclists traveled across the Broadway Bridge, too. So how do we decrease the number of cars in the long term and increase the number of bicycles? A lot of ways, but one of them is not building a bridge that increases traffic on local streets that bicyclists use. However, I don't endorse a do-nothing option. The sooner we reject the LPA and the sooner we start a supplemental DEIS with real alternatives, the sooner we can actually build a bridge that solves the problems with the current one. If we wait a few years to stop this project and then we write the correct DEIS, then that's a few more years before the real bridge gets built. What are the odds that this project will get stopped in a few years? Robert Liberty says more than 50%. That's pretty high odds. Is that what you're willing to risk? Thank you.
Very good.
I lived in Atlanta for 6 months, and then I moved from there to here. That's true. My name is Corky Collier. I'm executive director of the Columbia Corridor Association. I serve as chair on the Portland Freight Committee. I also serve on the CRC Freight Task Force, or Freight Working Group, excuse me. I had a great speech for you, but I believe Commissioner Adams stole it and put it in today's Oregonian under his own name. Those are great words.
We have your house under surveillance.
Well, I wish they had been my words. I'll just add a couple of things to today's comments. One is, I think most of us can understand and appreciate your concerns about ODOT managing the project. I feel confident that both DOTs, both governors and future governors, will respect the commitment to come to this council and get your approval as we move forward. And if they don't, rest assured that many of us will stand by your side to make sure that we correct that situation as quickly as possible. I want to make a couple of comments about earlier testimony. Jim Labby testified that there would be an increase in congestion with this project, and the Sustainable Development Commission testified that this project would increase greenhouse gases by 30%. That is not correct. Greenhouse gases and congestion will increase with the no-build option. If you go with this project, then what you'll have is a reduction in greenhouse gases compared to the no-build option. You'll have a reduction in congestion compared to the no-build option. Please build this bridge. Don't build it to bring people to Portland. We're going to have enough of them coming anyway. But build it so that we can restore the neighborhoods in Hayden Island. Build it so that we can watch Vancouver residents come to Portland on light rail. Build it so that we can improve stormwater runoff so that we can breathe congestion tolling to Portland. Please build this project so that we can get rid of one of the most dangerous sections of I-5. And build it so that you can get a kick out of a stunning bicycle ride across that river. Thanks.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Next three are Fred Nussbaum, John Reinhold, and Jim Edelson. They'll be followed by Melinda Merrill, Carl Rode, and Jefferson Smith.
Good afternoon, Mayor Potter, members of this council. My name is Fred Nussbaum. I'm here representing the Association of Oregon Rail and Transit Advocates, now headquartered in room 253 in Portland Union Station, one of our primary places of interest. My written testimony that I hope will be handed out here mainly address the procedural issues about whether or not you have to make a decision on the alternatives today or whether you can send this whole process back to have a whole range of alternatives. Many people ahead of me have been quite eloquent in raising that issue, so I'm not going to belabor the point. But regardless of the conditions that you're trying to put on your approval today, you're going to be losing local control. And the other thing that I'm not sure has been clearly mentioned to you is if your conditions are for something that is widely divergent from what was proposed in the DEIS, then you have to have a supplemental DEIS in order for further consideration of that proposal. So, for instance, a six-lane bridge without auxiliary lanes is not in the DEIS. It cannot be carried forward into the final EIS. So if that's what you think your resolution is getting you, it won't get you there. So you need to address all of these issues before you pass on the local preferred alternative. Rather than going, if you have all this before you, you can read all the text and the justifications for what I'm saying here. But I would like to leave you with this: the following. What we are facing in the Columbia River crossing is very similar to what sewer agencies face when they're faced with overflow situation on the sewer system. You can build new sewer treatment plants at a high cost, or you can get smart about what the problem is. And we've gotten smart here in Portland, and others have also, by recognizing that there are separate streams of water running into the sewer system. You've got surface water, and you've got black water. We've got the same thing on the Columbia Crossing. We have lots of commuters.
Sir, your time is up.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mayor Potter and commissioners. My name is John Reinhold, and I believe that at this point in time, the five of you already have your minds made up, so I hope that perhaps I can share a little bit of my experience. But on June 17th, a company based in Seattle, Washington, called INRIX, released a comprehensive study, a city-by-city, nationwide study of traffic congestion. Portland didn't rank anywhere in the top cities for traffic congestion. If you read the top cities, they're like a who's who of build more freeways. It's Houston, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., Dallas. And the current I-5 crossing did not rank in the top 100 traffic bottlenecks in the entire nation. So we're looking at spending $4 billion on a traffic bottleneck that does not even rank in the top 100 in the nation. If I were to apply the current Columbia River crossing approach of all or nothing to a metaphorical situation, the population in my household within the last year has increased 33%. I would like to ask the council to support my locally preferred alternative for my household to tear down my home and replace it with a home that is double the size. I would ignore any options such as reconfiguring any of my rooms or adding a small room at the rear of the house, but instead tear out the entire thing and build a massive home, but yet do it with no money, no financing, no loan. That's the equivalent of what we're asking us to do with the Columbia River crossing in this all-or-nothing approach. I support enhancing transit, traffic, freight mobility through the I-5 corridor. However, I don't support the build a $4 billion bridge or do nothing else. I think there are tons of little solutions that we can do that can improve the situation, and we can do it now, and we can do it ourselves as a community. Thank you.
Mayor, commissioners, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Jim Edelson. I live in Portland. I serve on the Transportation Land Use Subcommittee of the Global Warming Commission, but today I speak on my own behalf. It is too bad that it has come to this. You are making a decision between false choices based on faulty data. And I think you all know that. We've heard a lot about the oil price forecast. One of the sheets I passed before you puts a quote from the testimony before Congress of EIA Administrator Caruso, the very man responsible for this forecast, and cross-examination from Ed Markey, chairman of the Global Warming Committee. He said, if you were to ask me today, what would I use? I would use a higher price, not the reference price used in this CRC DEIS. That sounds like good advice, but the CRC is not following it. Let's look at what you've done yourself. Your peak oil task force recommended in its final recommendations to you, prevent infrastructure investments that would not be prudent given fuel shortages and higher prices. I think that's good advice, but not for the CRC. It says automobile use will decline and people will seek alternatives. That sounds like good advice, but it's not in the CRC analysis. Likewise, the Oregon Public Utility Commission uses $100 a ton, up to $100 a ton in global warming gas costs, not the CRC. They use zero. The Portland, Port of Portland in their airport expansion plans, that quote is before you, they will monitor and use up to $40 a ton, not the CRC. To paraphrase Commissioner Adams, let's not get rolled in this. And the best way to do that is to request a new supplemental environmental impact statement now before you make the decision. Once the decision is made, it's going to be too late. Thank you.
The next three are Melinda Merrill, Carl Rode, and Jefferson Smith. How about Ron Buell? They'll be followed by Jerry Grossnickel, Robert Marino, and Peg Johnson.
Good afternoon, Mayor Potter, Commissioners. My name is Melinda Merrill. I'm Director of Public Affairs for Fred Meyer Stores. I thank you for making sure everybody has a chance to talk to you about this today. I think what Fred Meyer can bring to this conversation is an emphasis on how critical it is that we continue to be able to move freight across that bridge, and particularly freight in and out of the Port of Portland. Fred Meyer and our parent company, Kroger, are the Port of Portland's largest import customers. We move that product to our Fred Meyer stores in the Northwest and to Kroger stores across the country. And we don't have the option of doing that during non-peak hours. We have to pick up and return our containers when the longshoremen are working. We recognize and appreciate and participate in efforts to get our employees and our customers to consider alternate modes of transportation. But the fact remains that in Oregon, a huge chunk of our economy is reliant on our ability to move freight in and out of that port. And when we have an empty space on our shelves, it affects all 31,000 of our employees in the Pacific Northwest. We're competing against companies who use other West Coast ports and can get their product to their shelves on time. Once we lose a customer, it's very, very hard to get them back, and that has a ripple effect on every single one of our employees. There are alternatives, of course. We don't want to look at them. We want to keep our business in Portland. But my transportation and logistics department tell me that without any change at all, the situation on that bridge in the next decade is unacceptable. We won't be able to move our product the way we need to. So I encourage you to take the steps that need to be taken for a new and workable bridge that enhances our public transportation system and enhances our ability to move freight. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Mayor and members of the City Council. I'm Carl Rohde, Government Relations and Public Affairs Director for the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. I'll formally, for the first time, welcome Commissioner Fish to the dais. It's nice to have you here. The Bicycle Transportation Alliance is extremely concerned about elements of this project and the DEIS. We are calling on the project, including a world-class bicycle and pedestrian facility. The 16-foot placeholder in the DEIS is a Kentucky-class bike and ped facility. We should be looking at something far better than that, and we are calling on it to be 24 feet on one side and 12 feet on the other. The second issue that we are extremely concerned about is the issue of money. The estimated $3.1 to $4.2 billion to pay for light rail, interchanges along a 5-mile corridor and the bridge itself does place a strong question as to what other projects in the region are in jeopardy as for funding in the future. The third issue, of course, is the issue of local control. In the event that the assurances that you have not received from the Oregon Department of Transportation are not afforded to you, then I would hope that, in fact, the City Council is prepared to take the strong position of not issuing the permits for this project, which is, in fact, your only legally binding way of stopping this project from happening altogether. The issue of tolling is extremely important, especially when you talk about congestion pricing. We need to start addressing the issue of transportation demand management, and gas taxes simply do not do that. And finally, considering the size of the bridge, evaluating only a 10 or 12 lane option is not enough. A rigorous analysis of 6, 8, 10, probably 12, just to show what that would do, is necessary as well. Thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning.
I'm Ron Buell, and I really liked your column in the paper this morning, Sam, and the goals that you laid out in it. But your replacement bridge has a problem, and one of those is it'll be high in the air to avoid lifts. And with a federal freeway requirement of no more than a 6% grade, that means it will be high in the air over Hayden Island and over downtown Vancouver. In your resolution and exhibits, you have not commented on the $1 billion worth of on and off ramps that are also planned to hook to this skyway up in the air. What will Hayden Island look like with a forest of skyway ramps 60 to 70 feet in the air? Doesn't the city's Hayden Island plan directly contradict with your own personal understanding of what happens today under the ramps of the Fremont Bridge and the ramps of the Markham Bridge? I know the citizens of Hayden Island are obsessed with the traffic they face every day, but is the city of Portland really ready to foist this project off on them, complete with the noise, the air pollution, the dirt, and the ugliness of the concrete forest you propose building for them on their island? There are a lot of contradictions in the DEIS, and why does the why do people keep referring to the DEIS? Your resolution says, whereas the draft environmental impact statement has been prepared in accordance with federal National Environmental Policy Act guidelines, but there's no low-cost alternative, no arterial supplemental bridge with transit and bicycles. Doesn't state law require examination of just such a low-build alternative? When Metro asked for such an option and didn't get it, why did ODOT and WashDOT say they wouldn't finance a low-cost alternative to a replacement bridge? Is there a sufficiently broad range of options before you under the law? The traffic modeling and the DEIS is based on a gas price. Wow.
Please continue.
The traffic modeling and the DEIS is based on a gas price of $1.25 a gallon. You're out of compliance with state law when it comes to greenhouse gas emissions. Do you really buy the CRC task force contention in the DEIS that by speeding cars up through the bridge impact area, you will reduce greenhouse gas emissions? Does it bother you that when it comes to the life of the planet, the DEIS you're approving completely ignores all of the scientifically provable evidence of second-level effects? For example, that congestion just moves down the road to another location. The land use modeled in the DEIS no-build option is exactly the same as 2030 land use outcome as that used for the replacement bridge. This means there's no calculation for travel induced by new Clark County development in the CRC traffic modeling. In a recent NEPA case in Illinois, the court stopped a major highway project dead in its tracks because there was no consideration of induced travel in the DEIS. So I followed this process closely,
Mr. Buell,
I've got to quit.
Exceeded
huh?
your time.
I bought you a minute 20 seconds.
That was very kind of you. I appreciate it. The council's got a remedy here. You simply decide today you won't approve a locally preferred alternative without a supplemental EIS, which addresses the problems I've detailed.
Do we have a copy of your written?
Yeah, I'll turn it in here.
Okay, great.
Please, no clapping, folks.
I've got Jewel Courtwright's testimony. You couldn't make it today.
Okay. Next three are Jerry Grossnickel, Robert Marino, and Peg Johnson.
How many more?
And then the last person who signed up is Gerald Fox.
Good afternoon, Mayor Potter and council members. My name is Jerry Grossnickel. I'm chair of the Bridge Committee of the Columbia River Towboat Association and CFO of our tug company, Burnett Tug and Barge, and Burnett Barge Lines. We represent a major industry that uses the I-5 corridor, but a little bit differently than the truck and car traffic. We use the river. We have a major navigational hazard at the I-5 rail bridge, Columbia Crossing area. And you've probably all heard about it or read about it, and that is that when we can't use the lifts, we have to use one of the higher spans of the I-5 and make a very complicated S-turn and line up with the rail bridge opening, which is on the north side of the river, the same side of the river as the lifts. So we would much prefer to use the lifts, but we cannot use the lifts when there is rush hour traffic, morning and evening rush hour traffic. The problem we foresee is that there will be increased traffic on I-5. It's inevitable. That will create more pressure for fewer times that we can use those lifts. That creates more danger for us. The danger is very real. Our captains have testified that they expect that we will eventually hit that rail bridge, which could knock out rail traffic and barge traffic. It would be a major catastrophe for our economy. Now, there was earlier testimony today. Robert Liberty and Jim Howell talked about, why don't we replace the rail bridge with a new rail bridge? We need one, and we absolutely agree with that. And why not move the opening toward the middle of the river? Then we can always use the I-5 higher spans. We can avoid the lifts. True again. But in 2002, we asked the Coast Guard for precisely this authority. There's only one way that you can get a privately owned bridge to be fixed without the owner's consent, and that is through a Truman-Hobbs action. We instituted a Truman-Hobbs action in 2002. We got the entire region behind it. I had great testimony. The Coast Guard's 8th District came out and absolutely approved our application. We had shown a major safety problem. The decision was taken to Washington, D.C. and reversed, partly because the major benefit to our action would be the highway system, because there would no longer be any lifts. We could not count that in the cost-benefit analysis. That was one of a very disappointing thing for us, but it also put us in a catch-22, because the only way that we could appeal this, get around this restriction, would be to ask Congress for a special exception and apply highway trust funds to this particular project. We were not able to successfully do this because all of our congressional delegations knew that the I-5 project was about to be entering a new stage, which, of course, was the stage we just finished with the CRC task force. So it is important that we get this problem resolved from point of view of the Tugboat Association. We support fully this CRC proposal. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Robert Marino, and I'm a resident of Portland. I'd like to acknowledge that it can be intimidating coming up here, speaking before all you fine gentlemen in suits and all these cameras. And I would just like to recognize the folks that wouldn't feel comfortable enough to come here and speak before you today. That said, I appreciate the opportunity to rise to the challenge. My request to you is to vote no on the proposal that's before you from the CRC. Further, my request is that you verify the CRC modeling as from an through an independent analysis as outlined by Commissioner Saltzman. Further, please consider modeling scenarios to address these questions. How can we mitigate the delays from the drawbridge without replacing the whole bridge? How does oil price relate to the number of cars on the road? At what point do rising fuel costs negate the need for building a new bridge? How can we limit sprawl from bridge feeder roads in Vancouver, where it is especially projected to grow due to the new bridge? How can we build Vancouver into its own destination for business and social activity? How can we get a high-speed transit system in the Portland-Vancouver region that can compete with vehicle drive times? And lastly, does building a new bridge meet the principle of reduce, reuse, recycle? Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon. My name is Margaret Johnson. I'm a member of the CRC Community and Environmental Justice Group. I'm also a board member of the Neighborhood Association on Hayden Island, but I'm here today as a board member of the Jansen Beach Moorage, and I'm representing our general membership, which is 177 floating home slips. Our moorage is really the only housing impacted in Oregon from any of these alternatives, and I want to bring it to the council's attention because you or your staffs will not see it in the DEIS, that floating homes are actually residential housing or single-family residential housing. We think we provide really important single-family residential housing in Portland. We live densely. We live in across from Diversified Marine. We live underneath the flight path. We live by the BN Railroad Bridge. Just want to bring it to your attention that we're out there. We know that we're not going to be able to. We're very supportive of the replacement bridge and the light rail option because the people that live on the island are fully aware of the horrible situation we're in now. Our air quality, air we breathe every day is affected. Something has to be done. And I have enough confidence in the system, maybe naively, that we can address these problems as we move forward, and we have to move forward because the existing situation is intolerable. But I do want the City of Portland, the Planning Commission, and the council members to understand that there is single-family residential housing that is being displaced on Hayden Island. It's a huge challenge for this project. And we're not portrayed, we're not counted in your tax revenue losses, we're not counted as acreage, we're not counted as houses. This is because we are floating homes and we don't fit into any of the nice, neat categories, and I'd like you guys to keep an eye on us, please. Thank you.
The last person who signed up is Gerald Fox.
Mayor Potter and commissioners, my name is Gerald Fox. I'm an engineer. I've been involved for many years in the development of the regional rail system. I've been following the progress of the CRC study since it began, and I'd assumed that the process would eventually lead to the development of a practical, attractive, and cost-effective plan to remedy the defects that we presently see in the I-5 bridges. I've been sorely disappointed. I believe the DEIS is fundamentally flawed because, firstly, some of the key project data is flawed, inadequate, or out of date. The DEIS does not consider the impact the added bridge capacity would cause on regional land use, urban sprawl, nor on the rest of the highway system. And particularly, I would be worried that if this bridge capacity was increased, the result would be gridlock in the freeway loop around downtown Portland. And so we could be importing a major problem by trying to solve a lesser problem. And I think this is a huge issue. Finally, there's been apparently no serious effort to develop less costly alternatives that could solve or at least mitigate most of the project goals at a fraction of the cost. How much might be accomplished for a project that had a ceiling price of maybe $1 billion, not four? How much could be accomplished if this ceiling was $2 billion, but not four? It's worth remembering that the $4 billion cost is almost twice what the region has spent building the 50-mile rail system that now serves us. It's also a sum of money that could go a long way towards developing a faster rail service between Eugene and Seattle. One example. We're listening to the advocates of this project. One is led to believe that if this was only built, life would be a lot easier, the trucks would flow freely, and that commuters could continue to drive to work. Sadly, this will not be so. I hope that you will vote against this DEIS and press for a more practical alternative. Thank you.
That's all who signed up.
I think to facilitate Q&A from Council of Doug and Matt. Thank you. If Doug and Matt could come back to the table and be prepared to answer questions from the council. And Doug, do you want to sort of explain who you are in relation to the project? Oh, and Jason Tell. Sorry.
I'm Doug Fico. I'm one of the co-directors on the project. I work for Washington State Department of Transportation.
Matthew Garrett, I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Jason Tell, I'm the Portland Region Manager for the Oregon Department of Transportation.
Oh, okay.
Question, Director Garrett. The draft resolution that we have before us has four pages of City of Portland policies as Exhibit A, which is incorporated by reference. And it specifically states that the city asserts its right to continue to comment on and participate in all major decisions in furtherance of the policies outlined in Exhibit A. Those policies reflect the broad-based consensus of people in our community in terms of a number of concerns under interchange, urban design, environmental justice, and the process itself. Can you tell me if there are any stated policies in Exhibit A which you, as the director of ODOT, specifically disagree with?
Commissioner Fish, there's nothing on the face of it. Now, again, a full vetting of those issues, as articulated in Exhibit A, play themselves out in the next phase. And that's where we can drill down. And, again, that's where the City of Portland, with their representative on the Project Sponsors Council, will help inform those discussions.
If I may, sir, do you consider any of the specific policy statements in Exhibit A to be poison pills which would otherwise kill this project?
I do not.
Maybe just follow up on that last point, and I know we discussed this yesterday. One of the conditions is that the CRC shall conduct an independent analysis of greenhouse gas and induced automobile travel demand forecast for this project, and you are committed to such an independent analysis.
And my hope is that the model out of that be based on everything we heard today, based on the most up-to-date information. But I'm also interested in that analysis being dynamic, that we model electronic congestion price tolling to determine what the trip shift from automobile traffic to light rail would be, given the other assumptions of the project. And so I hope that it will be dynamic and allow us as decision makers in the region, you know, to not only vet the design of the capital components, the hardscape stuff, but that policy around tolling is an incredibly powerful tool that's used around the world, not here. So I understand that it's not well known. and therefore there isn't, we don't have personal experience with it, so there might be some skepticism about it, but it is used very effectively on the ground all over the world with demand management. In our case, the ability to get vehicle people who currently drive their car onto light rail.
My other question was the there was a statement that the option of a separate light rail pedestrian bicycle bridge, seismic upgrades to the existing bridge was rejected for further consideration. Was that rejected by the CRC committee? Or
I may refer to my technical folks.
Who rejected it?
Yeah, I guess it's part of the task force engagement. So over the 3 years, there were a bevy of alternatives put in. And again, we have a purpose and need driving the conversation. And as we funneled down to the decision point of last month, those that did not meet the purpose and need, those fall off and we continue to pursue until we made the decision on the replacement bridge and light rail.
So it was rejected by the task force, which represented the 24 or some...
39.
And what was the basis for its rejection?
Well, kind of go back with the process a little bit. With the task force, they helped us with the criteria to put together the purpose and need of the project. Now, on top of that, after that was done, we went into the criteria we'd measure or the alternatives with to see that they met the purpose and need of the project. And with the... I don't remember the reason or what criteria the supplemental or the using the existing bridge and retrofitting it fell off on, but some of what I can remember, it did not help with the safety issue because you still had the same issue with the bridge lifts where we had it actually four times the chance of having an accident during a bridge lift with the normal hours, and also we had the issue of not dealing with some of the interchanges, like at the bridgehead at Hayden Island and at SR-14, it did not solve any of those safety issues. So a lot of it was on the safety criteria.
What about the cost? Was the cost of that option significantly different, or was that even, or was it costed out?
Well, I don't know the total cost was, but obviously just the seismic to retrofit the bridge, which you could never retrofit the bridge to today's seismic standards without a huge amount of cost, to where you're almost getting in the neighborhood of building a new structure anyways. There is some remedial type of mediation or that you could do on the with the bridge itself as far as seismic retrofitting that would keep it from collapsing, which would be in somewhere, you know, the $150 million, $200 million range.
And what would be the cost of the light rail pedestrian crossing?
That I can't, I don't remember the exact cost of that.
Is it significantly less than $4.2 billion if you add the two together? Or
the bridge itself is about, with the light rail portion, the bike and ped, and the, and if it's the six lane each direction option or the 12 lane, whatever you want look at it as, that's like $1 billion or $1.1 billion. So the extra costs are the interchanges and the highway improvements in between. So if you start adding the seismic retrofit to the existing bridge, you take an account, you got to go back and what I want to call is preservation. Redecking the bridge needs to be done over the next 30 years, maybe twice. You got painting of the structures you got to do. You have repair of the trunnions. The cables need to be revamped, things like that. As you keep adding up those costs, you start approaching the cost of a new structure.
And then also, we've heard a lot today, the call for a supplemental DEIS. Obviously, this means more than it sounds like. So what is a supplemental?
Supplemental
environmental impact statement. What is the practical ramifications if we were to say we want a supplemental DEIS? Does that mean we're rejecting this and saying study that option? Or, yeah, I mean, I don't understand EIS speak.
I'm not sure I do as well, Commissioner. But what I can tell you, if you move beyond the supplement, it means you do not accept the work and the direction of the alternative we have before you. So stand down and continue to study. So in a practical sense, it means more time, more expenditure. My concern is we have specific funding timelines associated with the federal conversation, whether it's at the Federal Transit Administration or, more importantly, the greater reauthorization of the Surface Transportation Bill, where significant monies are invested in transportation projects. My concern would be we would compromise our opportunities to ride that that reauthorization as well as the FTA cycle. So delay may be a deadly form of denial.
Yeah, no, I understand the delay part, but I guess is the scope of a supplemental draft environmental impact statement mean you would look at, once again, at other options, perhaps the one we were just discussing of the separate bridge for light rail.
It may mean that or more. You open it up, and that's how far do you go determines how long and how much you expend.
And normally, just to add to that, normally where a supplemental comes in is you proceed with a EIS, like the process we're in now. The request before the council now is just to continue from the draft into the final, which is where all the analysis and data and all the stuff that people want done will happen. And then you get to a record of decision, which does include the possibility of a no build. And generally, the supplemental comes in after you go through an EIS process, and you either get a record of decision on an option, and let's say you can't fund that option. We have highway projects in this region. EISs were done 20 years ago. The funding never arrived. And so if you want to go back and consider that project today, you would go do a supplemental, which just means you use some of the work that was done prior, but you have to update a lot of the data and stuff. So to me, it seems the supplemental seems premature because we haven't carried the process we're in now for it to get to that record decision and decide what is it. We haven't had a chance to analyze all the things that people want us to analyze, and that's really the request in front of the council today is let us go do that, and then we'll have all the information people want, then a decision can be made.
So if we complete the final EIS and determine the funding just isn't going to happen, then a supplemental DEIS would look at other options.
I think that there's a shelf life, so to speak, attached to these EIS. And again, if let's just say we run the record, we secure that record of decision, places us right at the cusp of construction. But the dollars aren't there. Then the clock is ticking on that document. And depending on when the funds would be infused, we may have to come back and refresh, as Mr. Tell just mentioned.
And if I could just, having sat through the 3.5 years of this, in terms of behind your question, Commissioner Saltzman, is we didn't look at rowboats as an option for crossing the river, but we looked at
ferry boats. Either.
We looked at ferry boats.
Oh, did
it? Yeah. Okay. Oh no, the options started out with a very wide net. We didn't look at swimming, but we looked at a lot of options that didn't meet the purpose and need statements that was put together by this big group. So this was a very involved, it doesn't mean that everything got thought of, but a lot got thought of.
Director Garrett, could I ask another question? And you know, I'm interested in the issue of if we put tolling on the I-5 bridge, the question of displacement.
Sure.
And it has been suggested that for this to work, you'd have to also toll the Glenn Jackson Bridge. What is the position of ODOT on that option?
I think it's an option we're looking at. It's not necessarily one to the other. There may be some diversion as we turn. How much? I will tell you the I-5 corridor is the corridor of choice by most people. That's where the infrastructure for commerce and goods, the ports on both sides, that's what it's built around, the I-5 infrastructure. So while I will say as we look at financing vehicles, conversations about I-5, conversations about 205 are indeed on the table, but you don't necessarily jump there.
But do you, as the head of the department, have a bias against tolling on the Glenn Jackson Bridge?
Not at all. It's a conversation that's being played out in terms of tolling policy in front of our Oregon Transportation Commission. I don't go in with a bias. I see tolling as nothing but a revenue mechanism. And then there are some collateral issues with regard to congestion pricing, the pricing or the dynamic pricing Commissioner Adams speaks to. That's a collateral issue on managing the system and the capacity of the system. So I have no biases going in. Again, I see it as a useful tool. I want to make sure we apply the tool appropriately.
And just to add to that, the Oregon legislature, the state statute, gives the authority, the decision-making authority on tolling to the Oregon Transportation Commission. So that's why Director Garrett mentioned where they'll be involved.
And if I may just follow up on that, to the extent we've heard that there could be a displacement of congestion south towards the Rose Quarter. To what extent would the revenues from tolling that exceed the needs to meet the bonding requirements be available to Oregon to cover the cost of any kind of mitigation measures as congestion moves south?
I think it's a corridor look, if I'm understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong. But it's my understanding if you toll the I-5 corridor, then you can invest along the I-5 corridor to make, obviously, the efficiency and the operational efficiency of that whole corridor improved. So
the requirement is, the federal requirement is, as you kind of referred, you have to show you can pay back the debt. And then the next order is you have to show that you're maintaining that investment that you built. And then after that, if there's excess, states do have the option to spend that money on that roadway. So it could go south.
And in the next phase, I'll be advocating for that. That tolling revenues be used for improvements in the corridors of I-5 and I-205. The other thing I think is an important part to just reiterate is that getting the tolling right is also the difference between this problem moving from the crossing to downtown Portland. So the tolling itself can serve as managing, not only reducing congestion, but also managing the bottlenecks. Whereas if you built a new bridge of 15 lanes and you just let it go, it would end up at the I-5, I-405 split, and we would have a mess. No one, I'm not going to accept that. These folks, I don't think, will accept that either.
Well, my final question is, we're talking about, the city of Portland is talking about 6 through lanes and the issue of whether we have up to 6 additional lanes for auxiliary traffic or whether some of those lanes become for through traffic. Is that still up for review between now and then?
To be specific, 3 through lanes going both ways. So you have your 6 through lanes going north and south. The other lanes we're speaking to are auxiliary lanes, access to the interchanges. They're not through lanes. It's just, again, to create a much more safe and
There's no question that those lanes would be auxiliary and not
right.
through.
That's correct.
And is there a question about whether there's up to 3 auxiliary lanes or 1 auxiliary lane or 2? Is that still further?
That's still on the table.
And one is contemplated as possible arterial access of the 3 auxiliary lanes, one might serve as arterial access for the island. But that's not decided either.
Director Garrett, I just have one question. It has to do with the DEIS.
Yes.
You said that if the subsequent environmental impact statement was different, that it would open up the entire process. Is that correct, what I heard?
I'm not sure I said if it was
different. The whole design process, because much of the design itself is premised on the DEIS.
That's where the work is done. Obviously, when you start speaking about lanes, much of what we've heard today, the concerns people have shared with you, is the type of work that if we do clear this and support the locally preferred alternative, it will allow us to start to address those issues of lanes, the auxiliary lanes. How do they look? Of the greenhouse gas modeling, the financing, the pricing elements of this, the design, the bike ped facilities. So that's during that year-long period, maybe more, but a year-long period, that's when we engage in this discussion. That will inform how close we are to realizing a project, completing it with a final, securing that record of decision from the federal agencies.
What I heard a lot of the discussion today, maybe you can clarify for me, is that it was a lot of it was about the fact that the information, the basis for the DEIS, was outdated information. You talked about shelf lives. It sounded like the shelf life for some of that information was 1975, not 2008. And I'm concerned that if that information is going to remain as the basis for the decision making about the number of lanes and tolls and so forth, that we're operating with faulty assumptions to begin with. And I'm concerned that that's going to lead us down a road that the conclusions may not be what is necessary, but what is based on this faulty information.
Mr. Mayor, I appreciate that, but I guess I just respectfully disagree. I don't know about any information dating back to 1975 that was applied.
$1.25 a gallon. When was the last time we paid $1.25 for a gallon of gas?
I'm not sure. Well, I can't remember. It's been a while. I would agree with that. If that's what was cited, I'm not sure we used that in our modeling. I think we used a different modeling in terms of what it costs to operate a vehicle. But that said, I guess I would.